Hey, what's up? Okay, post game, Cenk and Brent, and I had to run. So, a couple of things.
Yeah.
I went to New York, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
Felt good. I soaked it in this time around.
Did you just do that?
Yeah. Took a red eye on Wednesday after old school.
Oh, God.
Came back Sunday.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Do you like the red eyes?
Of course not.
No one does.
No one does. So back in the day of the TV money, the red eyes were bearable because you would fly business class or whatever. And as you lie down, it's a very comfortable thing. It lies down all the way or almost all the way. In fact, the buttons were very complicated. I don't know if you've ever been on one, but it's not just a lean back. In business or first class, it's like got a thing for your leg and then another one for your feet and then one for your head and another one for your ears. There's all these different buttons, okay?
Uh-huh.
And like it took me quite some time to figure it out. Anyway. Because I'm a spaz with that stuff. I'm like, wait, this one's going back, this one's going forward.
And then there's always someone next to you just like hitting the button going, just shaking their head at you as they
right.
see what's
so
bad.
So under that circumstance, not that big a deal. You go on the plane, it's comfortable, so you just sleep the whole time, you get up, right?
Great plan.
Yeah, in coach, not so much. So this time it was fine. I knocked out, only got up once, but oftentimes the seat is so damn narrow,
yeah,
and you have trouble sleeping in your neck, and oh, it's a disaster, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I do it so that if we, because otherwise I'd miss the Wednesday shows too, and I don't want to miss the Wednesday shows, so that's why I do the red eye. Okay, so I was on a business trip, so parts of the story will speak well of me, other parts will not.
Okay. Great.
Okay, so let's see if I can remember them all. Okay. So I'm walking around in the streets with someone this is a really funny way to describe someone, but in the business community, okay? Somebody recognizes me, they're like, oh, well, that's pretty neat, okay?
Yeah.
Because we were walking the streets of New York from one meeting to another. And then a second person recognizes me and he's like, so this is a thing.
That's right? Great.
Right? And then a third and then a sixth and then an eighth, et cetera, right? And he's like, oh, I get it, right? And so he means well by it, 100%, and he's a really good guy. So I don't blame him at all because it's hard to understand. But like since we get almost no other press,
right?
Like no one would consider us famous.
Right, right, yeah, yeah.
So when people recognize you over and over again in the streets, it seems jarring, like, wait, well, I don't get it, I know you, and I've never seen you on the cover of a magazine, but all these people know you. It's weird. I don't get it.
I read a prospectus about you, and there's a research packet if they're in the business community, maybe,
right.
But that's it. Yeah, no, that's I get it. Though it is real. I go to Japan a fair amount as a Japanese shirt. I was walking through in Shinjuku. On the one side was Spencer Hawes, who's an NBA player. On the next to me was JJ Redick.
Uh-huh.
Walking down the street. These are famous basketball players. At least one is 7 feet tall, so you recognize him. The other is JJ Redick. You kind of recognize, very big time basketball player.
Yeah.
And someone goes, you're famous. And they were talking to me from the Young Turks.
I love it.
They did not recognize the two NBA basketball players that I was walking next to. One of which Charles Barkley spent a lot of time talking about once. Spencer Hall's, Asian put Spencer Hall's in the game. But that was it. There's in multiple times abroad. I've had in Japan specifically multiple conversations with people who are like, "You're what I watch." This guy named Riley watched Pop Trigger. I was like walking through a random street. He's like, "Brett."
Yeah.
And it's just yeah. So all over the world, not just in New York City.
No, we can't buy a sake in Kobe.
You can buy it.
Okay.
All you want.
So.
People might buy it for you.
That's kind of the point.
Oh, I get it. I thought you meant without people stopping us. Now I get it. Now I'm there.
Okay. So anyway, that was nice to see. And but you know, I'm still bitter to this day because we haven't been on the cover of magazines.
Yeah.
We haven't gotten you know, just anywhere near the love that anybody else in the media gets. And so that's why every time it is, like whenever I'm with someone, it's a shock to them. Like it's an absolute shock, right?
Like we send out for like booking people on Happy Half Hour and Damage Report. I made like a one sheet and I went to Praveen folks and was like, can I just have like a little blurb? And I read that blurb and the blurb is like, number one among millennials in the world of any new outlet, period. And I was just like, oh, that's a good blurb. And it's true, but it's, yeah, you don't see it in all those, in all the.
Yeah, I mean, so in, according to ComScore, which is among the most respected organizations that rank websites, it actually, I think, undercounts us for boring reasons I could explain another time. Anyways, among 18 to 34 year olds, we beat CNN and MSNBC and Fox News combined, okay?
That's and, amazing.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure we have a little less money than they do.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, so.
That's great.
But like, when is like New York? This has New York Times Magazine ever written a piece like, "Whoa, look at this"? But if you're a jerk off right winger who has like a fraction of our audience, they're like, "Oh, intellectual
dark web, know,
dark web dude! Oh my god, that's so interesting. He's got like 13,000 subscribers, but he's right wing. He's right wing. That's amazing, amazing. How about us? Oh, nothing. Fuck off."
So why is that? Do you think they have a chip on their shoulder? Be like, people make fun of us for being the left-wing media. We're gonna overcompensate by covering this. What is it?
Yeah, two things. And by the way, this is part of what does not speak well of me, that I continue to be bitter about this. Okay, I'll get to another part in a sec. Two things. One is, they call us liberal media. So if there's any right winger, it doesn't matter. If they're fascist, it doesn't matter. If they're small, we're gonna make a big deal out of it. Oh, Diamond and Silk, oh my God, Diamond and Silk.
Right.
I mean, they're having congressional fucking hearings over Diamond and Silk, okay? So to describe them as a pimple on our ass would be a compliment because they're not that large, okay? And so apparently now you know the size of pimples on my ass. Okay, so that came out. No, I'm kidding. Anyway, but if you're a left winger, they're like, no. They'll call us liberal. Just no. We don't give a shit. We don't give a shit, right? Okay. So that's one. Number two is, in old media, there is still massive disdain for digital media. So YouTubers, I mean, put us aside. And to be fair, there are much larger channels with more, if you're just taking not our whole network, but Young Turks versus, you know, name like around 100 channels that are have more subscribers, average view count higher, not political, not news, just random dudes, right? They're freaking huge, man. They have fans, I mean, they could buy a sake less in Kobe, okay? Like they're freaking gigantic and they barely get covered.
Yeah.
Barely get, like if one of those guys, if you were a singer, a young singer, but like you were on the radio or whatever that old media pays attention to, and you had 34 million followers, you'd be on every cover. The next hot thing, unbelievable. You had a TV show, right? And you got good ratings that were nowhere near 34 million. Oh my God, Shane Dawson, the next coming of Elvis and Ricky Martin, etc. Oh, you did it online. Well, that doesn't count. What the fuck? Why doesn't it count?
Which is tough to justify because they're busting their ass trying to get a digital footprint.
I know.
And it's because for a while I kind of convinced myself, well, it's the same people. There's a lot of media buyers. They just don't want to learn something new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know that Nielsen ratings mean something because they've always meant something. With the Nielsen ratings thing, like I used to work and I used to have to call in and get like the rating. And then I looked into it and it turns out like if one extra person with a Nielsen box watched your show, then you got twice, you doubled your ratings. Like if three people, it's just literal individuals and they're kind of generalizing based on a smaller sample. Now with the digital age, you can count 100% every person who is watching at all. That should be more valuable. They should pay more for that information.
Don't get me started on the advertisers. Yeah. Okay.
But they just have the old, like, all right, so you want to watch these people at 2 o'clock, at 2 o'clock on a Thursday, it's going to cost this many millions of dollars.
So frustrating. Okay.
They don't have any incentive to learn more in that situation.
Yeah, that's a whole, like, there's a whole different rant about that, that it's somewhat related, somewhat not related. But yes, they're conservative. Yes, they don't want to change. Not conservative politically, conservative by nature. They don't want to learn new things. All that and then some, plenty more on top of that. But you know, in the midst of this venting for the billionth time in a row, and sorry if we've subjected you to it a little too much, I did come to a little bit of peace of mind. So that's weird. Okay, so here's why. I realized, like, it's not, they're not, somebody working at the New York Times, as an example, is not thinking, okay, I am challenged by digital media, hence I don't like it, or I'm gonna be bitter at digital media and not cover it, or they're a competitor and I'm not gonna cover it. I don't think they actively think any of those things. I think that it's just hard, near impossible to change people's perspectives. And a lot of those folks grew up in a time when digital didn't matter at all. And so, like, that's why in the newspaper business, they're still obsessed with, is it in the print version?
Right.
Who gives a fuck? Like, the print version is seen by 17 people in New York. The digital version is seen all across the world. Why do you give, the print edition is the real edition. And that's the one that matters. Yeah, in 1978. Today, who gives a shit? But they're not bitter against themselves. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're not biased against themselves. You should want to appear in digital way more than you want to appear in the print, but they still want to appear in the print because it's nearly impossible for them or for us or for anyone to get them to change their perspective because that's what they grew up in.
Right.
That's who they are.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
So unfortunately, that means until we get a whole new generation of reporters, etc. And unfortunately, those guys then grow up, even the young reporters, a lot of them grew up in the culture of the old reporters.
Yeah, and they got kind of jumped in through it, essentially. They were still treated as like the cub reporter 3 years ago. And yeah, it's the question of like, when is that entire model of earning your stripes gonna be moot and everyone accepts it?
Yeah.
It's weird with like the New York Times though specifically, because I get the digital version, I did get the print version. Now I get, it's weird, I get it on like my Kindle, but I still subscribe to all the feeds. Something will have, I've gotten it on my phone, and then 3 days later, it's on the cover of the New York Times print version.
Mm-hmm.
So it's weird, like eventually it earned the right to get on the cover. So I was on digital first, and I saw it first, I digested it first. It made its way out there into all the newsrooms and everything.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I love you guys who are members, because you adapted, right? And among the many reasons why we appreciate it. But my dad, that's why part of why I appreciate him. He's 81 years old, but he's constantly adapting. And so I remember, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I was like, Dad, you know, every day you come home from work, turn on primetime news, and you'd watch one of those guys. I haven't seen you do that in decades. What happened? He's like, why? I already read online. Why I need that guy to tell me, right? And that's it in a nutshell. But my dad, who's 81 now, to be fair, back then he was 64, whatever he was, right? Moved so much quicker than the entirety of the media in America.
Yeah.
It's amazing. All right, anyway, now another thing that doesn't speak well of me because I care about this when I shouldn't, okay? Last night, Judd Apatow retweeted one of my tweets.
Awesome.
Okay. And I was totally fucking proud.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then Adam McKay did. And so, but Adam McKay does it all the time. And I've told you guys that seven times. I'm becoming unbearable. But I'm so like, Adam McKay's freaking awesome. He's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, he did The Big Short. He's got a new movie coming out about Dick Cheney called Vice.
Yeah.
Oh, the trailer is amazing. Like,
Talladega Nights.
Not to mention, you know, almost every Will Ferrell movie, Anchorman, and not to mention Succession on HBO, which is freaking brilliant.
His daughter's Pearl from from the, remember the original Funny or Die video, Pearl, the evil landlady, where that's just like a kid, and then Will Ferrell going like, stop raising my rent, Pearl. That's his daughter.
Oh, that's
one time
funny.
I was on vacation and went to the fancy place next door, and he was there with a kid, and I was more starstruck by him and his kid than I was probably any other time.
Yeah. Year. There was two NBA players next to him.
There were two. Pearl. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Apatow's like.
Yeah. So look, theoretically, I should be a tough guy and not care. Oh, what do I care? Somebody retweet. God damn it, I care. I have to be honest, I care.
All right.
Okay.
It's good.
Yeah. Speaking of which, one last unbearable story, and then we'll move on. I'll tell you a funny story about my mom. That's fun. to your point about the NBA players, this was now several years ago. I was at dinner with Oliver Stone and John Cusack.
Love it. Good okay. dinner. What did you eat? What do you order with those two?
Italian food. Italian food.
Yeah. Those are two men that are getting the same head over time, like the same head shape. I noticed that about them.
Huh, that interesting. I had not noticed that about him. And a waiter comes up and says, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to do this, but I'm just such a big fan. And we're looking around, is it gonna be John? Is it gonna be Oliver, right? And he says, I watch the Young Turks all the time, right? And both of them are like, whoa, okay. So I was like, yes, okay. Anyway, they're both great guys. But anyway, so now to my mom. So she's writing poetry lately.
Great.
She goes to New York and from her house in New Jersey and sits in Bryant Park and then writes poetry. Okay. Who doesn't love that about
their
mom?
Amazing.
Yeah. So she read some of it to me and it was really good. And then my dad, of course, is constant entrepreneur. He's like, we should take those, make book, sell lots of things. Okay. I'm like, Dad, it's Turkish poetry. But anyway, okay, God bless.
So what is Turkish poetry like? What makes Turkish poetry? Like, I know what a Russian novel is. It's very long and sad. What is Turkish poetry?
Well, predominantly, the main thing is it's in Turkish.
Okay.
So my point is there's not a huge market for Turkish poetry, mainly because it's in Turkish. is it going to sell out in Turkey? Maybe. They're really good poems, no joke, right? Anyway, but it goes to all of our different like characters. And so my mom, her reaction is, never. She loves her privacy. She doesn't like, so she's like, never. She's like, I will throw them in the garbage right now. Okay, I'm like, Mom, just please, please calm down. Don't throw them in the garbage. Okay, fine, fine. We won't make a book. She's so weird, funny that way.
Have you ever read any of her poems? Has she even like let you read them?
She read them to us at the, look, my favorite thing in the entire planet is going back home to New Jersey and sitting at my parents' kitchen table and talking to them for hours.
Really?
Yes.
New stuff.
Yeah, I love it. New stuff, old stuff. I try to get more old stories out of them every time I go, right? So about how their great aunt did this and how my dad formed his first company when he had no money. How they got married and it was an arranged marriage, but there's like twists and turns and
crazy
drama, right? So we talked for hours and hours and I love it. So she read me some of her poems when we were hanging out on Saturday. And then my dad read me his poems that apparently my mom's brother made into a little book in Turkey.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Not a bestseller.
No.
But he only made one book. I'm kidding. They weren't trying to sell it. Cute little book of poetry. And I'm thinking like, this is gonna be like old school Turkish and I'm not sure, like what, right? Like what's Turkish poetry? Right?
Yeah.
And it turned out it was really good. Like, I'm like, oh my God, that's even better than my mom's, that's crazy.
Oh, don't tell your mom that.
Okay. I will throw it in garbage right now.
Give me that, I'll throw it.
By the way, my mom does not speak like my dad, so that makes no sense. Okay.
Yeah.
So, no, my dad wrote a poem about evolution that was excellent.
When was the last time you wrote a poem?
Well, I have written one poem, and which we read on air to great hilarity. Called Hope.
Hope. Oh, that's good.
Yes, and the famous line from that poem, which Ben will sometimes reference in the, and sometimes Anna will reference this, is that blue I see? Oh, I should read it for the blue wave.
Uh-oh.
Oh, on November 6th, I should read it again.
Dramatic reading. We'll get a stand-up bass. Boom, 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 boom.
Oh,
boom.
Now I know about the bass because of other discussions we've had on it.
The bass is
the
good.
The bass is everything. I know now.
I recently, so it's funny you talk about like things from the family, from the past. I recently, my mom lives in Central California. We met in the center. Between where I live and where she lives at the, in Thousand Oaks, Westlake, at this place called Brent's. When I grew up in the valley, there's this deli called Brent's, and it's like, where are all the old Jews? Oh, you just go to Brent's, and they like, takes them 2 hours to walk through the parking lot and to get their like, you know, corned beef Reubens. And so they finally, they opened one in the in Westlake, went there with my mom, and she brought these photos of my great-grandfather.
Oh, love it.
My great-grandfather was a gaffer. On the old Hollywood studios.
That's an awesome story.
It's a light person. So
and it's like, she, no one knows what a gaffer is.
People like, he's a sound guy. Okay, that's fine. He was a gaffer. What is that? Gaffs? No, he's the lighting guy.
Uh-huh.
So I have all, she gave me just like this stack of photos, and I put it on my Instagram story of just my great grandfather just not looking at the camera.
Oh, that makes sense.
These giant, amazing cast and crew photos of like someone you may not have heard of. There was one, I think Gloria Swanson's in one though. And like my great grandfather's in the back, just like holding a light. But they used to do all these like giant set photos for the actor's birthday. Uh-huh. So there's all these photos of like the movie The Champ, and it's like the kid's birthday, and everyone's around, and there's a big cake. And there's everyone looking at the camera, like having a great time. And there's Johnny Lee just kind of looking off to the side.
Is he because he's doing the gaffing or because he just refused to look at a camera?
I think it was his bit. I think he was either he was just kind of like on his own little wavelength, which is awesome. Uh-huh. Or he just was like, everyone look at the camera. And then Johnny Lee at the last second would just go,
good old Johnny Lee. That was his name?
Johnny Lee, yeah. And there's all, and so I have also these like signed photos of people who were in these movies he worked on through, I think it was MGM from 1929. And it's their headshots. And the quality of the paper is like so much better than any photo I took at Mervyn's when I was like 12. It's these old photos and they're immaculate. And it's all these things, and everyone has such great handwriting. It's like, to Johnny Lee, and it's this beautiful penmanship. People just wrote better back then, and it's just these headshots.
Yeah, that's because they didn't have computers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they had to write to communicate.
But what's weird about these old headshots is so many of them are just profile pics.
Uh-huh.
And like now you have people that are like having a great time, but like, back then, it's just like these amazing old photos.
They were pulling a Johnny Lee.
Just pulling a full Johnny Lee.
Yeah, they're like, no, wrong.
And that was it. But it was awesome. It's
you know,
great.
The only way that story gets better is if you find out that it turns out your great-grandpa worked on a movie that Ben's grandfather wrote or somehow or his great uncle directed, because that's a lot of movies
back. That's a lot, because they would just pump them out.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
So if your great grandfather was a gaffer on a Mankiewicz film, how cool would that have been?
Maybe it's very, very possible.
I mean, they might have had a beer together at some point.
So weird.
Because Herman liked it. Herman's the guy who wrote Citizen Kane, who's Ben's direct grandfather. He liked to drink.
Yeah.
A little too much.
So did my grandfather Grover. You remember there's a place Tom Bergen's over here? I think they just shut it down or it got new ownership, but it was one of those places where you walk in and on the walls there's just a bunch of clovers with people's names on it and you're like, all right, that's weird or whatever. You ask around, if you drink enough and you become enough of a regular, you get your name on the wall and there's like Grover, my grandfather, he's got it. Yeah.
Good for him.
Good for him. It's one of those like dubious honors.
That's
like,
right.
You did spend quite a bit of time at this.
Yeah. I have one of those at a local diner. Once you get to 250 pounds, they put one up there. Like, this guy's eating a lot here. Okay.
Our work is done.
All right. Last thing is what? Herman liked to drink. I was gonna tell a story about that. Yes. So this almost ties everything together. So, and I butcher this, the telling of this every time, but I'll make it quick. So Herman comes out here and turns out there he starts writing movies, fairly simple back in the day, okay? Mm-hmm. And he's like, holy shit, it's a lot of money in movies, right? Because remember, and this is why how it ties into our earlier conversation, when they started making movies, everybody looked down on them because they said, oh no, real actors are in the theater, okay, where only 100 people can see you, not in movies where the whole world can see you.
And you only have to do it once.
That's right. No, real actors do it over and over and over again and shout at the top of their lungs so the guy in the back of the theater can hear you and act totally unrealistic. These movie guys that are making all, you know, that are seen by everybody in the world, losers. So the guy who had to deal with that all the time was Charlie Chaplin. So when Charlie Chaplin went into the movies, they're like, oh, what an embarrassment. He couldn't cut it in theater, had to go be seen by the whole world and become the most famous person in the entire planet. What an embarrassment, humiliating, right? So Herman comes out here, he's writing scripts, he's making crazy money. He writes to his brother, sends a fax or whatever they did back in the day, not a fax, a telegram, right, right. Obviously.
A pigeon.
Okay, that's right, a carrier pigeon.
Send a raven.
He sent a three-eyed raven. And he writes, come here quick, lots of money to be made, everyone is stupid. Okay, don't tell anyone else. Just like four lines, and that was the essence of it.
I love the idea of like a quickly written letter, right, and then send it off in 2 days. Like I had an epiphany. That's amazing.
Yeah, he's like, look, and he was right. So his brother came out, and then the Mankiewicz has dominated in both writing and directing for a long time. And
sounds like a fairly Mankiewicz thing to say. Yeah. Everybody's pretty dumb here. They're yeah. stupid.
Nobody. I mean, that's what I like about the Mankiewicz. Right?
Yeah.
He's like, look, everybody else out here is a moron. This job's really easy, and they pay you a ton of money. Just don't tell anybody else, okay? They'll come and ruin it for us.
Okay. So fantastic.
And he was right. They came out. So if you don't know, because it's old timey, right? The Mankiewicz has dominated the movie industry in that sense so much, not in owning the movie companies or anything, but in actually writing, directing, etc. Joe Mankiewicz, Cleopatra, All About Eve, etc. I was going through the Fox Studios once, and I'm like, Ben's brother's name is Josh. He's on Dateline, Josh Mankiewicz. I'm like, what the fuck do they have a picture of Josh on the wall for? That's so weird. I'm like, no, and they've spelled his name. It's not Joe. Oh my God, that's Joe Mankiewicz.
It looks just like him.
It looks just like Josh. And I'm like, wow, that's so fucking cool, right? Did you make the money? What was I going to say about that? Joe Mankiewicz.
They drank a lot.
I'm back to
they're
drinking.
They're out there.
Yeah, maybe I'm drinking a lot.
They're
that's
winning.
Why I'm forgetting.
But to tie it all together, it sounded like you're going with like.
Oh, I remember.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So one day I'm watching, this was like a million years ago, a friend of mine. Okay, no, seriously, I'm watching a porn, okay?
Good for you.
Okay, but it's a classic. It's a classic, okay? From like the 1980s or whatever.
All about beef.
All about beef. That ain't right.
That's bad. I was trying. I was just using.
That's no, terrible. But that's what the 1980s porn titles were all like.
You had to do.
I didn't watch it, but I saw the title Edward's Penis Hands. You know, and there's all those. There's a whole genre, right? Cleopatra? No. Okay, anyway, they would do stuff like that. Okay, so in the movie, it's a 1980s porn, but it's a period piece about the 1940s, mm-hmm. Okay? And one of the actresses, only I would watch that. Anyway, one of the actresses says, I'm gonna be famous. I'm gonna be in a Mankiewicz piece.
Oh, you gotta take it right out.
Right, and I was like, oh, that totally. I'm like, now I gotta pause this and I gotta call Ben. I'm like, you're not gonna believe what I just saw.
Ben, I got a lot of things to tell you, but don't ask any questions about it. Yeah, we'll We'll get there. He's like, was it all about beef? Yeah, yeah. I've seen it.
I don't think we're going to beat All About Beef, so I think we're going to call it a day.
We did a bunch I worked with someone, and she just showed up, and she was like, okay, my friend worked for Vivid Pictures. You have to name, we needed names for a bunch of these like things, and they'd give us like categories. And my friend won, he got one that was The Devil Wears Nada, so you can watch that.
Oh, that's real? That's a movie?
That's a real one that got made. Okay. There was a.
That's really good, though. That is clever. The Devil Wears Nada.
The Firm.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, it writes itself.
And then my favorite contribution was for a group thing. It was Bonnie and Clyde and Steve.
Oh, that's so funny. Okay. I remember another one I remember from back in the day from the 80s or early 90s or whatever it was. Because they had a whole section of them, right? Was the Sperminator.
So ridiculous. I remember going into like in Van Nuys, there was like an adult store, and I walked in. I was so nervous. I'm like, but I'm 18. I'm gonna go walk in. I'm a cool guy, and just like people in earnest named these movies, these things, and you're just like, I'm gonna leave. I can't take this seriously.
Yeah, no, I took it seriously. okay, but that's for a whole nother show, another day, post-game or old school. I'll tell you funny stories about Adam Video in East Brunswick, okay, and our adventures at Adam Video, and how I got caught by one of the cool girls in class in the adult section.
She was there.
No. That would have been a great story. I would have been writing a telegram to someone. Come to Adam Video.
Stop.
Right. Cool girls in the porn section. Stop. Don't tell anyone else. Stop.
So good.
All right, guys. We'll see you tomorrow. Thank you, Brett.
Thank you.